Welcome to, is that a little bit loud? Welcome to the Malloy program for a Friday evening. Thanks for tuning in. We do appreciate it. And I have just got to, I've got to just pause for 1 second here and thank, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, thank the right-wing bloggers around the country who have made this program so popular this week. I do appreciate it. It brings lots of listeners in who otherwise wouldn't know about us, and for you new listeners, stick around for a few nights and find out what truth sounds like. Anyway, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. This hour is being sponsored by Patricia Kunkel. She writes, can we have a resounding I hate Republicans? Yeah. You want to open your mic, Kathy? 1, 2, 3. I hate Republicans! Thanks, Patricia. Email from Rebecca Kaiser, who writes, Mike, she's referring to the other night, last night, I think. Last night. Mike, last night you were talking about the Indians in North Dakota protesting the pipeline trucks crossing their land. And I say, thank heavens they are. But then you mentioned that people in Pennsylvania and New York State are doing nothing to protest the coming of the hydro-fracking industry to their states, and that is, all caps, very much not true. There are thousands of residents that have been protesting, organizing, creating educational video about the ruination of the water, the land, the communities, roads, and the housing problems that happens that are devastating to the towns when the fracking industry comes in. These residents have signed hundreds of thousands of petitions and delivered them to the EPA. The EPA is supposed to write regulations to protect animals, water, air, etc., but have constantly made this industry exempt from any health and safety regulations or any requirement to disclose the poisons in the fracking water they use. These, quote, good white European residents, end quote, attend EPA meetings, speak out with a very educated understanding about the facts, as learned from neighboring towns and states that have made the mistake of letting them start drilling years ago before the industry lies and the reality of all the secret chemical poisons being used were fully known. They have been fighting for years, and sadly, Governor Cuomo and other representatives are giving them the corporate paid-for deaf ear. Please don't denigrate them. Help them. These are the little guys that live in the countryside, and they are fighting like crazy against the big money forces of the industry. My sister lives in Alfred, New York, and is extremely active with all the protest groups locally and nationally throughout the country via the Internet. Please stop making fun of them and give a voice to help them fight the corporate money that now owns their state legislature and the governor. Rebecca Kaiser. All right, a couple of things. First of all, I do not make fun. Lord, 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 where do people come up with this? I do not make fun of people who are protesting fracking. I don't know where you heard that. You're confusing me with a right-winger. Secondly, my statement, yeah, I did say that the people in Pennsylvania and New York are not, and they are not, doing what the Lakota people were doing in South Dakota. The people you're referring to, Rebecca, as you write, they've signed thousands of petitions, delivered them to EPA, attended meetings, and on and on and on. They speak with a very educated understanding about the facts at these meetings, and so on and so forth. And yet, in your email, Rebecca, you point out the fact that nobody's listening. And this is precisely my point. I don't denigrate, and I don't know where you came up with that word either. I don't denigrate people who sign petitions and go online and attend EPA meetings. But in your own words, you're saying that the EPA doesn't listen, that the governor doesn't listen, that nobody is listening. And in fact, matter of fact, in the email, you talk about the corporate paid deaf ear of your government officials. Rebecca, this is the point that I was making. The Lakota people do not sign petitions. They do not attend EPA meetings to any great degree. They take themselves out. They stand in front of the trucks and they say, get out of here. And then some of them wind up arrested. Now, what makes the news? Meetings with the EPA and petition signing? No. Lakota Native peoples standing in front of trucks, threatening them to get the hell off their land? Yes. Do you understand the difference? With all due respect, Rebecca, I do not denigrate people who sign petitions and attend EPA meetings. I've done it. But at some point in my political awareness, it became readily apparent to me that for the most part, signing online petitions, I said for the most part, sometimes there are exceptions, and attending EPA meetings does nothing. On the other hand, 1 million Pennsylvanians or 5 million residents of New York or 10 million Americans or 50 million of us who get out on the streets and say enough would make a difference. So, with all due respect to you, Rebecca, and you say your sister is active in Alfred, New York. To anyone's active, bless you. More power to you. Go for it. Don't give up. Keep going. But at some point, I think everybody who wants to protest stuff like this has to come to a conclusion that petition signing online and attending EPA meetings are not effective. If they were, this would not continue on, as you say, Rebecca, in your email, with the governments giving everyone the deaf ear. Okay? Okay. I support you and your sister and anyone who wants to attend an EPA meeting and anyone who wants to sign an online petition. But if you stop there, how effective do you think it's going to be? Well, quick answer, take a look around. It is not effective. I hate to get into intense discussions like that with people on when we're both on the same side, but this is a matter of tactics. You know, the liberals have been trying for decades through signing petitions and showing up in congressional offices and sending letters and emails and writing their member of Congress and making phone calls over and over and over again. This is part of the compassion fatigue but activist fatigue, where you try and you try and you try until finally it starts to dawn that you are petitioning the very people who are paid by the industry to do what the industry wants. If liberals would understand that petition writing is essentially useless at this point, what will it take for liberals to understand, for Democrats to understand, and to a certain degree progressives to understand? We can write as much as we want to write. Let's all write wonderful, challenging op-ed pieces and post them all over the net. Let's do that. And let's celebrate those pieces that we read from really intelligent, intense people who write these missives. Like, for example, I'm just picking one out of the air here, Chris Hedges. But at what point is it going to dawn on people that we're talking to each other? We are writing to each other. That the only thing to get the attention is massive, which Chris Hedges is proposing, massive, nonviolent, physical, in the street, resistance. Okay? Okay.
And kill. You can take their oil and our money and drag us down the road to heaven. I am a patriot. That's safe in a land that's clean and free for every color and culture, every person, every belief. Your greed, your fear, and your lies ain't gonna push me around. I'm gonna use the power I have. I'm gonna vote you right out of that house, cause I am a patriot.
Ζήσαμε μαζί κι όμως χανόμαστε την πιο καλή στιγμή. Όλα Mike Malloy, Jeppo, all substance, no abuse.
Or something. 21 past the hour. Regarding the demonstration or the resistance, it wasn't a demonstration. It was flat-out resistance by members of the Lakota Nation against Keystone XL. Regarding that, Huffington Post is reporting that the contract assigning a third-party company to investigate the environmental impacts of the project, the Keystone Project, adds to questions about the impartiality of the study. Now, we talked about this, how, a month ago? But the document was shown to be a binding contract between the outside company and the company building the pipeline, not the State Department. So the State Department, as we reported to you several weeks ago, the State Department conducted a part of the review, but an outside company hired by Keystone or TransCanada, the pipeline builder, this company hired by TransCanada is the one been doing the environmental study. Oh, well, now that makes sense. Now, the contract was posted to a State Department website a week ago, very quietly. It's always done on a weekend, very quietly, in response to a request by Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont. And it shows that it is a signed agreement between Entrix, E-N-T-R-I-X, and the consultant and TransCanada, the pipeline builder. The posted version, the one put up on the State Department website a week ago, was also heavily excised, with most names and numbers, as well as some entire pages, redacted, blacked out. Why? It's an environmental impact study that's going to affect millions of Americans and Canadians. So why not make it a public document? It's at the State Department website, but everything's blacked out, especially names and numbers and these sons of bitches. You see, this never stops, does it? Anthony Swift, an energy lawyer with the Natural Resources Defense Council, the good guys, said, quote, "What appears to have happened was Entrix was doing an environmental study intending to minimize the potential environmental impacts of Keystone XL. It's sadly not incredibly surprising. We were dealing with an environmental review that was done by Entrix on TransCanada's behalf. And that does not pass muster of environmental law. Tisk, tisk, it really doesn't." The State Department has previously defended the arrangement as following typical third-party contracting procedures. A State Department spokesman told Huffington Post last Friday, quote, "Third-party contracting is very common," or this Friday, today, "third-party contracting is very common in federal environmental reviews of projects proposed by private applicants. In each case, the applicant, a private company, pays the cost of the review so that taxpayers do not have to. Whee! While the work of the contractor is entirely supervised by the federal agency. Whee! But the work might not begin if the truth were told. A private contractor is hired by TransCanada, a private contractor that has a vested financial interest in TransCanada. If nothing else, they're being paid by TransCanada to do an environmental impact study to see if what TransCanada is planning on doing is going to harm anything. What do you think the answer is going to be? Well, even the part that's a little bit drifts off into the horror we're about to experience is redacted. And what's posted at the State Department website? According to our that's how you read a redacted document. Oh, my God. Entrix and TransCanada have denied conflict of interest allegations. Huffington Post previously reported that the State Department's review of the environmental impact of Keystone XL was hampered by its lack of scientific staff. Well, they had a lot of people who would pray and had Bibles there, equipped to mediate any disputes that might emerge between TransCanada and the contractor. Well, I'll tell you what. Since you don't have any scientists on scene to take a look at these studies and say, no. Why don't we all get together at lunch and we'll pray? We'll break out our Bibles and our New Testaments and we'll sit down. Jesus, we come to you this lunch hour asking you to review what we have done and to give us your approval. We will accept your silence as approval. If you don't approve, sweet Lord, send a lightning bolt into the equipment shack over there on the count of 1, 3, 2, 1. Okay. Thank you, Jesus. We appreciate the fact that you have approved our little fraud.
Soldiers of peace are not fighting the war. Are not looking for enemies behind every door. Are not looking for people to kill or to maim. The soldiers of peace are just changing the game.
Nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Patricia Kunkel. Her message, can we have a resounding I hate Republicans? Sure. I hate Republicans! Thank you. Thanks for the sponsorship, Patricia. From Daniel in Seattle, Washington, Mike, welcome to the prologue of Dark Ages Redux. Today I read where the state of Pennsylvania is considering a bill which would require a state ID card when going to vote, an act which would marginalize the elderly, the poor, and legions of other people. Utah, for its part, has instituted a 72-hour waiting period for abortion. At least 172 pharmacies in my own state of Washington, at least 172 pharmacies in my own state of Washington will continue to reject clients going in for contraception, and particularly the so-called morning after bill. The Freedom From Religion Foundation is prosecuting more and more cases involving separation of church and state violations. The damned Christo-fascists just don't give a damn and will continue to violate constitutional mandate until they finally get a Supreme Court to rule in their favor. And given the current makeup of the court, this might be sooner rather than later. I could go on almost ad infinitum, but then I'm not telling anything you don't know or haven't discussed on your program. which, by the way, is very nearly the last bastion of free speech and liberal values in the media. However, I find that at my more or less advanced age of 53, that I've become very much re-radicalized. The teabaggers love quoting Thomas Jefferson, especially his comment about watering liberty's tree with the blood of patriots and tyrants. Well, I see no reason why I can't appropriate Jefferson's sentiments and say, quote, "Methinks the time for violent revolution approacheth, there we go, end quote. Obama will probably win the upcoming election, God forbid that the Mormon doesn't, but I fear little will change. The various states are performing a yeoman's effort in destroying rights that have long been established in this republic. I do not see a bright future for the United States of America." A loyal listener, Daniel, in Seattle, Washington. Well, I think it's time for Prairie 2. All right, where have I hidden him? Prairie 2! Prairie 2! Well, where? Oh, here it is. The title of his report tonight is "Remember Where You Parked." Another month has gone by, and Obama, the socialist, Kenyan, Mau Mau, Marxist, job destroyer, has plunged the country deeper into the Clinton Great Depression. Wait, what's this? 428,000 new jobs, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics household survey? And now we've had 2 full years of positive job growth? By all that's holy at Fox News, say it's not so. You can hear the moans from the ghosts of Andrew Breitbart. Times aren't so good over at the far right. The corporate news doesn't report the 428,000 new job number, preferring the employer survey that reported only 227,000 new jobs. Keep in mind that the now non-existent presidency of George Bush produced exactly zero net jobs in 8 years. Republicans skip directly from Clinton to Obama these days. Even the private sector employer survey's number is really 6,000 jobs greater at 233,000. But the red states continue to shed government workers. The damage this austerity is doing to their economies is becoming ever more obvious. And the redder the state's governor, the worse it is. Wisconsin, under the notorious Scott Walker, a wholly owned subsidiary of Koch Industries, Wisconsin has the distinction of being the only state with 6 months of continuous decline. Walker keeps trying to stall his recall election, but this may in the end only result in the FBI recalling him before the voters can. Half a dozen of his staff are already under felony indictments for running a pay-for-play scheme on taxpayer time right out of his office. Ooh, there's a surprise. Gas prices leveled off early this week and actually fell back a penny. Oil companies are circulating the talking point that they are merely discounting winter blend gasoline to get rid of it, and prices will resume the march toward $5 a gallon next week. Wait a minute. I thought gas prices were set by the market. What do you mean the oil companies lowered the price? The fact is that the Wall Street banks have been buying up as much gasoline future contracts as possible in order to create a phony shortage. They're a party to as much as 90% of daily trading gasoline futures. And the hedge funds are hoarding gasoline in every tank, farm, and offshore tanker that they can get their hands on. But with so much gasoline and such weak demand, they may have already reached their peak of influence. If Obama were to announce the release of strategic reserves like he did last year, it would burst the bubble. Remember paying $6 at the pump last Labor Day? It was unanimously predicted this time last year, and it didn't happen. And it won't happen now. In fact, some hedge funds may take a real beating having bet heavily against Obama. There could be a lot of that going around this year. Before anybody sends me nasty emails for being an Obama apologist, let me point out again that he hasn't fixed the economy. He's just holding the Red Sea at bay. The corporate chariots are still bearing down on us. It's up to the rest of us to get organized and make the crossing to the promised land. Now, where did I park that cart full of Canopic jars? Prairienumeral2.com. Okay, I give up. What the hell's a canopic jar? Do you know what it is, Kathy? C-A-N-O-P-I-C? Oh, God. Okay, let's stop the show for a second while I'm asleep. C-A-N-O-P-I-C jar. Canopic jar. Canopic jar. Oh, ancient Egypt. Huh? Canopic jars were used by the ancient Egyptians during the mummification process to store and preserve the viscera of their owner for the afterlife. Oh, those canopic jars. Oh, there's a picture of them. Aren't they? Oh, that's what those little things are. See, if you listen to Prairie 2 and Michael and Roswell and a few other correspondents here to the Malloy Show, your vocabulary begins to swell and expand. Canopic jar. I'll be damned. It's where they put a dead person's guts when they buried him. Prairie 2 reminds, it actually reminds me of my English teacher in my fourth year of high school who would do that constantly. She would use language. She was mostly focused on literature, but when we would get to grammar and expansion of vocabulary, she would drop a word into a sentence. Usually it was a question, not a sentence. She would say, Mike Malloy in the back, what did you normally find in canopic jars? And, of course, Mike Malloy would just sit there and go, fermented blueberries? Canopic. It pays to increase your word power. Vikram Pandit, you know who he is, the CEO of Citigroup, the nation's third largest bank. He is receiving a $15 million bonus compensation for his work this past year, 2011. That's according to the Wall Street Journal. 9/10 of his pay for 2011 comes from this bonus, which includes almost $8 million in stock options and a little over $5 million in cash. Now, Vikram Panda is being rewarded for making his company profitable again. And that includes his plans and his already, and the fact he's already cut, thousands of workers. Citigroup says it plans to lay off an additional 4,500 employees in the immediate future. But despite the profitability, Citigroup stock hasn't been performing well. Though the company's profit rose 6% last year, according to Reuters, its stock price plunged 44%, according to Google Finance. Pandit worked for a dollar a year with no bonus in 2009 and 2010 as the bank struggled to return to profitability after receiving a government bailout. The bank announced, what they're doing, the bank announced earlier this week that we'll use IBM's Watson, the supercomputer, to, quote, analyze customer needs and, quote, personalize digital banking. That translates into Citigroup is going to start charging $10 monthly fees on combined checking and savings accounts with a balance of less than $1,500. You don't need a supercomputer to do that, you dumb bastards. You can use a handheld calculator or, better yet, an abacus. You know what I'm saying? So, thousands of jobs gone, but Vikram Pandit, a $15 million bonus. Yeehaw!
radio right from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Patricia Conkle. Thanks, Patricia. And her message is simply, can we get a resounding I hate Republicans? Anytime, kiddo, anytime. I hate Republicans! Careful you don't rip your throat out there, okay? Okay. Oh, regarding Vikram Pandit and his massive bonus while Citicorps slashes thousands of jobs. That's just the way capitalism works, folks. Jamie Dimon, another one of these filthy bastards, the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, he took home $23 million in 2011, last year. $23 million. And he's been much less charitable toward critics and the new financial regulations. He said a few weeks ago that he was safer in Lebanon than he was with Occupy Wall Street protesters, remember? And he also recently declared that journalists are paid, the pay that journalists get is, quote, just damned outrageous, end quote. What a slime. What a filthy, filthy man. The reason he... He's kind of reacting. Vikram Pandit did say that the sentiments of the Occupy Wall Street protesters are, in his words, completely understandable. Really? Ooh, what does that mean, Mr. Pandit? Does that mean you are going to not fire 4,500 people and return your $15 million in compensation for your work in 2011? God, I hate these people. I just really do. If they were doing something to earn their money, of course not. Of course I wouldn't hate them. I mean, what do you do to earn $15 million? What do you do? I know what you do to earn $50 million a year. You have a radio program and you fill the airwaves with lies and distortions and hate and vitriol and fraud and puke. That's how you make $50 million a year. How do you make $15 million a year? Well, you fire thousands of people. How do you make $23 million a year? I don't know. You do the same thing as Vikram Pandit does. You just lie, cheat, and steal. Why not? You commit fraud because you know you're safe. Who's going to investigate you? Congress? Excuse me. Governor Chris Christie in New Jersey, he stuck his foot in it again. Christie was at a town hall meeting in Burlington County, and a veteran, a former military guy, was there. And Christie gets into an argument with this veteran over the state's plans to reconfigure public universities in Jersey. And as a result of the back and forth, the governor called this veteran an idiot. His name is William Brown. He's a Rutgers Camden law student. And he opposes the governor's plan to merge his school, Rutgers Camden, with Rowan University. That's according to the Philadelphia Inquirer. It seems like students are under attack, not just liberal talk show hosts, but students are under attack by the crazy right wingers this week, too. The veteran, William Brown, asked the governor during this town hall meeting to consider how the merger would affect students. And veteran students in particular, before going ahead with his plan. Christie responded by telling Mr. Brown the merger was going to happen because it would provide bigger and better opportunities. And the situation devolved into a shouting match, and Brown, the student, continued to make his argument while Christie was speaking. The student was saying that no one in South Jersey wanted this to happen. So finally, of course, Governor Christie ordered security to throw Mr. Brown out. And he said, quote, if you decide what you want to do is put on a show today, let me tell you something. I can go back and forth with you as much as you want. And let me tell you something. After you graduate from law school, you conduct yourself like that in a courtroom, your rear end's going to get thrown in jail, idiot. Oh, nice, Governor. That's really nice. Huh? Well, I can go back and forth with you as much as you want, except those times when I have you thrown out. My God. And then after he had Brown thrown out, Christie said to the rest of the people who were sitting there in terror and little puddles of urine, he said, quote, "You know, I tried to be patient with the guy. Every time I tried to answer, he started yelling over me again. Damn, man, I'm governor. Could you just shut up for a second?" Oh. Okay. Sure. The student, William Brown, told the Inquirer after the encounter that he worried that the merger would hamper educational opportunities that now exist for veterans and other non-traditional students like himself. Mr. Brown said, quote, "I think he's a bully. I was disappointed the governor couldn't have a debate." Well, I can see how that would be shocking, but Mr. William Brown, veteran and non-traditional student, you have to understand something. You're talking to a Republican. You're talking to a loudmouth right-winger, and they don't care about you any more than they care about, women on welfare or men getting Medicaid or women depending on Planned Parenthood for medical services. Mr. Brown, newsflash, whatever you were fighting for, oh, you were a Navy SEAL too, okay. Whatever you were fighting for, Governor Chris Christie doesn't represent that. We'll be back after the break.
Contains
past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by the awesome Malloy Show chat and Skype group Malloyalists. It says here, every night you fight the flying monkey right and bring sanity to us all. Thanks to you and Kathy for all that you do. And only people in the chat room will know what that means. Phone lines are open, 877-996-2556. Margo is in Los Angeles. Hi, Margo.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How's the program going?
Good. Working on it.
Oh, good.
Well.
Okay.
Yeah, so had some issues, but working them out.
Well, you have you have to do that. It takes a little while, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But I'm hopeful. But I'm calling in because I wanted to talk about something that I reported on this week that I think is really important to hear. I've covered a lot of foreclosure stuff here in L.A., but this one I think is the most disturbing one that I've come across, and it's about a woman who and her husband they were foreclosed on by Bank of America.
And
it was the usual thing, you know, they went for a loan modification, the bank gave them the runaround, and without their knowing, they sold the home to an investor. So in order to stop the sale of this home, they filed for bankruptcy. And when you do that, it's supposed to put a hold on any type of action on the home.
Right.
Because of the litigation. But despite that, the investor came to the home and called the police and did a citizen's arrest on her as she was arguing with him, saying, you know, this is my home, I have this paperwork. They arrested her.
Now, wait. Who did the citizen's arrest?
The investor.
Oh, my God.
The investor, and they did the citizen's arrest on his behalf. Any homeowner who has tried to put a citizen's arrest on a banker has never succeeded.
Correct.
As far as I know.
Correct.
But this investor was able to have her arrested. So they took her in, LAP took her in, and they found out that she is undocumented. She came over from Mexico. Didn't file proper paperwork, didn't get a visa. And so they deported her. They turned her over to ICE, and they had her immediately deported. Now, the issue here is that she's married to an American citizen. She's been in the country for 15 years, and she's owned this home for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she has two American citizen children. So I know last night you were talking about women's rights, but it's clear that this particular woman has no right to be with her children, even though they are American and her husband is American.
Isn't it astonishing the power that corporate America can, or capitalist America can assert over people who are just trying to live their lives? Isn't it? And you know, it's another example, Margo. I just wonder how much of this has to happen before the resistance becomes more than Occupy, less than the French Revolution, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, you know, I saw a picture online somewhere, and it had a picture of a police officer and said, we're the 99%, but we do the job of the 1%. And I think that is really where the issue is in a lot of these things, is that I think when, you know, people who enforce the law finally realize that, you know, I'm enforcing things that aren't right, you know, then I think we might actually see a change. But until then, it's going to be very difficult. You're fighting against people who can arrest you and throw you in jail, you know, on behalf of somebody else. I mean, a citizen's arrest, I mean, that's a little extreme just to see that happen, you know. But you know, they are... So immigration groups out here and also Occupy LA are planning a march this Sunday as well to support her. And that's going to be at the Placita Olvera in downtown LA.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that they're looking for people to come out, definitely. But it's just really disturbing to me to see this happen as an American citizen and not as a journalist, to see that, you know, Newt Gingrich said something like, well, if you've been here enough years, we should let you stay here. Like, well, how many years is enough? This woman has been here 15 years. She made a life here. She pays taxes. You know, she hasn't broken any laws aside from not, you know, going through the proper channel to come over. But it seems like if you're willing to sacrifice that much, if you're willing to risk your life to come to this country where we were born here, we had the fortune of being born here, I think you deserve to be an American.
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, Margo.
Yeah.
Well, keep us informed of what happens. You say this march in solidarity is this weekend?
Today at 10 a.m. Placita Olvera, they're going to be meeting there.
Margo, we missed the first part. You're starting to break up. Say that again.
Yes, I'm actually on a bus. It's on Sunday at the Placita Olvera in downtown Los Angeles at 10 a.m.
Sunday, 10 a.m. downtown Los Angeles at the Placita
Olvera.
You're gone again.
Yeah, I'm really sorry. I'm traveling.
Okay. All right. Well, I think folks got it. Margo, thank you very much. Thanks for letting us know about that. It's not surprising. I think anyone knows that you stand in the way of corporate or capitalist America, you're going to get run over like, I don't know, like you were standing in the way of corporate or capitalist America, right? Thanks, Margo. The stories are legion, of course. Maybe not necessarily that profoundly criminal, but they are legion. What do we got here? James is driving in South Carolina, listening on XM. James, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you, sir? How are you?
I'm good.
Well, listen, I told you, your screener, I wanted to kind of deliver you some praise because I like your show, okay? You know, I had an opportunity to get a Sirius XM radio, and I really, really like your show. It's just very, very interesting to hear, you know, your point of view and to hear you so vehemently, you know, espouse the things that you believe. And honestly, you know, I think that it gives me great ammunition, you know, for when I'm talking with my left wing friend, with my liberal friend.
How does it give you great ammunition, if I might ask?
Well, because, you know, I mean, honestly, you know, the point of view that you espouse is kind of somewhat simplistic, and it's, you know, again, it's based on feelings.
It's somewhat simplistic. How is it simplistic, Mr. James? What do you mean? Give me an example.
I'll tell you what.
I'm going to let you stay on. I have to do a break. I'm going to let you stay on the line on one condition, that you mind your manners, okay? You call it simplistic. Do what your mama taught you. Do what you learned in church. When you say something, and then I say something. And then you say something, and I say something. And when we come back after the break, if you're still there, James, I'll come back and chat with you. But the first time you interrupt, first time you try to overtalk me, like right-wingers normally do that I allow on this program, I'm going to make you disappear. So it's your call, James. Stay there if you dare.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Okay. All right, James, let's see if you can conduct yourself like a gentleman. Now, you said that my point of view is simplistic. What do you mean by that?
Well, again, you know, I've already delivered you to pray. The fact that everything that folks, liberals, espouse, they use feelings, emotions, to defend. I mean, there's no black and white.
James, I have to interrupt you because, see, you're not following the rules here. Let me try again. You make a claim. I am simplistic. I asked you to give me an example of what you mean.
Oh, I see.
Okay,
I see. Go
ahead.
Well, let's talk about the Dream Act. I mean,
the what? Talk about the what?
The Dream Act.
The Dream Act.
Yes.
I don't think I've ever talked about the Dream Act on this program at all. You're going to have to stick with something I've talked about. Now, James, my patience is starting to run thin, I must tell you.
So how about this?
You said I'm simplistic. Give me an example.
The caller before me talked about her friend who came into the country illegally. And
weren't listening. You weren't listening. It was not her friend. It was someone she doesn't know. It was someone who was about to be evicted. She filed bankruptcy. The person who bought the property as an investor came and put a citizen's arrest on her. And it turns out that the woman was here without the proper papers. So, see, once again, James, this is where I'm going to disconnect you, because you don't listen, or you listen with your ass, or you listen with ears that are all clogged up with Limbaugh speak. If any of you right-wingers want to call this program, I welcome you. But you have to do what your Bible and your parents supposedly taught you to do. Mind your manners, talk in full sentences, and when I ask you a question, because you're coming into my place of work, I'm not calling you in your car or your home, you're calling me in my place of work. Therefore, if I ask you a question, answer it. If you cannot answer the question, say, "Mike, I'm sorry, I can't answer the question." At which point I will say good night, and then because you're a good caller, you'll say good night, Mike, and that will be the end of it. Okay? Okay. right wingers, I'm simplistic. You know, that's the truth. I have never, and I should have at this point, I've never discussed the Dream Act on this program. In fact, I'm not exactly sure what it is. I know it's about education for people who are undocumented in this country. I don't know what the acronym DREAM is. And consequently, you know, I try not to talk about things that I don't have at least a working knowledge about, unlike right-wingers. Right-wingers will pick anything. You know, Obama's not American! Excuse me? That kind of stuff. So anyway, caller driving through South Carolina, keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road, and, you know, roughly 14 hours, you'll be able to hear a Saturday replay of your boy Rush. Okay? But you shouldn't try to call a program like this one, because the BS that is pumped into your head 24/7 gets in the way and you get lost. You get lost in the BS. So, again, to any right-winger who wants to call the program, fine, as long as you can conduct yourself in a reasonable manner. Because, again, you're calling into my place of business. You're coming into my home. Now, I have the welcome sign out because I have a talk show, radio talk show, and I put the phone number out and I invite callers. So I'm inviting you into my place of business, or for 3 hours a night, my home. So as your mama taught you, and as I'm sure you learned in some Sunday school, mind your manners. Can you do that? Can you repeat after me? Mind my manners. Good. That's very good. Now, if you can do that when you call this program, why, heck, we might even have a conversation. Okay? Oh, my God. Ah! But I do mean that, of course. I do mean it. I welcome any. Always have. Matter of fact, I beg for right-wingers to call in. The only caveat has been you have to talk sensibly. And that immediately wipes them all out. We'll be right back.
to the Flying Monkey Right. It's Mike Malloy.
It is indeed 25 before the hour. This hour is being brought to you by the awesome Malloy Show chat and Skype. Wait a minute. The awesome Malloy Show chat and Skype group. Is that what it is? Group? Yeah. Called the Malloyalists every night. It says here, you fight the flying monkey right and bring sanity to us all. Thanks to you and Kathy for all that you do. Well, that's very kind from the Malloy chat group. If you're curious about the Malloy chat group, go to MikeMalloy.com and you will find a way to join the group, I guess, right? Is that right, Greg? Greg is our chat master in there. Thanks a lot, folks in the chat room and the Sky group, the Malloyalists. One more time? Okay. They know what that means. Thanks to Prairie 2 and to Reg at TVNewsLies.org. Reg writes, the DREAM Act. The DREAM stands for Development, Relief, and Education for Alien Minors, D-R-E-A-M. And Prairie 2 gives me a quick thumbnail. I guess I knew this. No, I don't think I did. The DREAM Act allows immigrants who arrive in the U.S. before age 16 to attend college if qualified or enter the military and work toward eventual citizenship. The right wing opposes this. But at the same time, they want to give green cards to the 50% of advanced engineering and science graduate students that come from abroad to study here. This group would drive down engineering and research salaries, excuse me, since they can be deported if they piss off the corporations they work for. The former, the students, the 16-year-olds, would likely be expect to be paid like any middle-class American citizen. And, of course, the right wing can't have any of that. Okay, so now it makes sense why the DREAM Act is opposed. I guess the other reason is that a lot of those folks coming in would not be Caucasian. And we got to be careful of those non-Caucasian folks coming in, right? Jackson is in Washington, D.C., listening on Sirius. Hello, Jason. Or Jason, I should say. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Not too bad. I just want to talk about the fact that the Seventh Court of Appeals basically determined that now a police officer can search your cell phone now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The number of news links to it. So essentially, you know, their justification is, like, if they see some drug dealer, because, of course, it's always a drug dealer when they give their example.
Right.
Just as if he had a notebook or something with him and the police can go through the notebook, they should be able to go through your cell phone. So, you know, it all starts the same way, and until you realize one day you're probably going to be driving your car and you'll be pulled over and they'll say the words, license, registration, and cell phone, please. And then, of course, who's going to be the person that's supposedly in charge of watching the watchers? Because, you know, here, you know, they've already got this stuff. They've got these things you can put on the bottom of your phone and it'll download everything that's in there. So, you know, you got a little racy picture of your girlfriend or your boyfriend on there. Guess what? That's going to be stored somewhere.
Yeah.
And then maybe you're making like a joke with your friend. Of course, it's an inside joke, but maybe taken out of context can be construed in a certain way. You know, maybe you're going to certain websites that are on there.
Right.
And, you know, suddenly now you're on a list for something. And all these people just keep wrapping their names around it. You know, it's all for your own good. And if you don't have anything to worry about, you know, not doing anything wrong. You know, and I'm sitting there and I think about the days of, like, you know, well, let me see, you know, when people start collecting files on people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and for the most part, for all the stuff that they're saying is for your public good, it's also for control methods by the government.
Let me ask you something. Where do you think, generally speaking, I realize, I assume you're referring to a court decision, but where do you think the attitude that produces those kinds of court decisions comes from? Do you think it comes from the political right or the political left in this country, or do you think it comes from both?
Well, I have to say it comes from both, because I feel that the Obama administration has gone farther than the Bush administration has in terms of reappointing the Patriot Act, the NDAA, you know, I know we can label you a terrorist, but don't worry, you can trust us. I mean, I feel like a person holding a gun to my head and saying, don't worry, I won't pull the trigger. You know, it's this gradual slope, but it's always under the same thing. I mean, think about this. The TSA has yet to nab anybody, whereas all of the other, you know, people that have supposedly gotten nabbed for terrorist activities have all been people that just, like, the two guys, like the one in New York City, the guy had, I think it was like a couple of hot dog vendors noticed the truck that supposedly had the bomb in it.
Right.
You know, and now they're saying, okay, well, let me get this straight. We have this the TSA officers. Now, you know, the funny thing is I'm calling them an officer, but the reality is they're just a bunch of people with a badge that have no law enforcement training at all. I mean, if anything, this is like the lowest level, you know, mm-hmm. that you could basically put on a uniform.
Mm-hmm.
So they're talking about, well, now we're going to search at airports. Now we're finding out that the screeners, possibly the machines, might not even be as good as the people say they are.
All right.
Because of this latest YouTube video from this guy talking about how the people in Israel, the Ben Gurion airport, they won't even buy the scanners because they know that if you really wanted to, you could foil them.
Yeah, Ben Gurion airport. Well, what do you think then if you hold left or liberal philosophy and conservative philosophy as it translates to the court system responsible for this? What's an answer? What's your best answer of how people in this country should react to this or combat it?
Well, there's a number of things. First of all, you know, remember the highest elected law enforcement person is a sheriff in your town. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, whatever people talk about, you know, things that are going wrong, remember somebody has to execute the orders of the people above them. And I hopefully can rely on the person in your town. Do not vote for a sheriff that just wants to go along with what's going on. I mean, you know, you start to try to take somebody's property illegally, let's say if you're one of these crazy mortgage foreclosures that really weren't authorized, the sheriff in your town should say, no, I'm not going to do that sort of stuff. Or, you know, I mean, a number of the state legislatures right now, I mean, the NDAA stuff, you know, some of the legislatures are talking about making it so that local law enforcement or state law enforcement will not participate in any of this military being used in the United States. I mean, it's off the scales because it always goes to this extent of it's always about trying to protect you. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I've seen more abuses by the government itself under the guise of trying to protect me. And if, you know, if they're busting all of these things that are supposed to be terrorist activities, well, be honest enough to tell people about things that you've actually done so that you can build a case that convinces me that what you're doing is warranted, but I don't see any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at the end of the day, I just think what the government's doing is making it so that we're going to be in this police state of some type where everything that you do has got, I mean, like, you've seen some of these lists of, like, all the stuff that can possibly, you know, you go to they're sending, like, notifications out to businesses where, if you go to a home, like a camping store, and you start buying, like, large amounts of, let's say, meal, you know, like pre-processed food that could sit on a shelf in just in case if there's an emergency,
right.
That's a suspicious thing. You know, somebody's paying cash for things. That's a suspicious thing. And the answer is like,
well,
man,
Jason, if I may, first of all, I enjoyed your call. You make some very, very important and some very, very good points. I think, though, I wonder about that last part. You know, if you buy stuff at a sporting goods store, meals ready to eat 10 years from now, I don't know, unless you buy like a couple of truckloads of it. I don't think that would call up a lot of suspicion. Well, although you may be right. Hell, I don't know. I would probably
take a look at it. The notifications that they've been sending out to different businesses,
right,
specifically are targeting it. So it's like it's almost to the point that whatever the definition is, you're almost labeled as a suspicious person just for doing something that's not, like almost not even beyond normal. And what it does is it opens the door and gets people's brains processed so that they constantly are thinking that everybody is like out to get them. But what that does is the fear element is what the government uses as a method to pass things that normally it wouldn't. So whenever anything happens, anytime they start talking about children it's always like, and then the next thing I know, they're going to try to take more money from me, or they're going to try to use it to take away civil liberties, all under the guise of a protection aspect. Because the problem is most people give a logical argument.
Yeah, I get that. Jason, I'm going to have to leave it there because we're flat running out of time. I don't disagree with what you're saying, especially the overarching reality of what you're saying. What I have told myself around these issues is to not to get too far into the paranoia and get deeper into my firearms training. So I'll just leave it at that. Thanks a lot, Jason. I appreciate everything you had to say. Take care, pal. Before the hour, this hour is brought to you by the awesome Malloy Show chat and Skype group, Malloyalists. Every night you fight the flying monkey right and bring sanity to us all, they claim. Thanks to you and Kathy for all that you do. No thanks to you folks for all that you do. Yeah. This is funny regarding the last caller from D.C. about and my claim about not being too paranoid. Prairie 2 writes paranoia is not unwarranted. The principles of data mining call for gathering and acting on information that would otherwise seem innocuous. If they churn out Venn diagram intersections from one of their computer algorithms that says people who store more than a certain amount of canned goods are domestic terrorists or too liberal, you can bet they'll be putting you on a list. Don't read this on the air. Oh, never mind. They read the email before I finish typing it. And you know what's really funny? About 2 months ago, Molly is in a kind of an advanced math class for second graders, and she came home and she said, "Daddy, I'm going to do a Venn diagram." I looked at Kathy. I said, "What in the hell is she talking about? A Venn?" Well, now I know. So, Prairie 2 had a chance to score another hoop tonight with the term Venn diagram, but I already knew because I have a second grader who showed me what a Venn diagram is. I like this part on the end. Don't read this on the air. Oh, never mind. They read the email before I finish typing it. And who says people who understand economics can't be humorous? Who said that? Kevin in Colorado Springs. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mike.
Hi.
Last night, Kathy was having a hard time wrapping her head around all these things that you've been talking about. And I had great empathy for her.
You mean the anti-woman legislation and the anti-birth control, it's pregnancy control, medicine, and so on and so forth, right?
Right.
Well, now you have to understand something. Kathy will make it sound as though she's having a hard time wrapping her head around it. What she's really doing is waiting till a commercial break so she, like I, can scream obscenities. And she fully gets it. But that's all right. I mean, I hear what you're saying. Go ahead with what you're saying.
Well, no, what I'm thing is, I'm sure we all of us have gone through this at one time or another, and you very soon come to the realization that you can't understand psychopaths. It's totally impossible. No matter how much you study them, no matter how much you try to understand the reasoning for doing things, it's incomprehensible. And I wanted to comment, and James proved my point on that beautifully, but I wanted to comment, too, on what James was saying about you being simplistic, and he started to say something about your talking with emotions and such as that.
Mm-hmm.
James, if you're losing your house, your life, everything you've worked for, wouldn't you be kind of emotional about it? If you saw your friend doing that, losing their house, wouldn't you be kind of emotional about it? There's nothing wrong with emotion. And there definitely is nothing wrong with emotion as part of this Occupy movement, because that's what it's about, is helping people and standing up to this government that would do what they did to this woman out in L.A. And I, you know, James, I honestly, I will be happy to donate a pod. I've been donating podcasts on the payment method ever since I won my podcast, but I will be more than happy to donate a podcast to you so you can listen to Malloy for like 3 months. And then you might comprehend what he's talking about.
Kevin, the problem is, right-wingers do not understand emotion. Have you ever noticed something? Whenever they talk about emotion, like if you're watching television and a reporter will say, so-and-so showed emotion today when, or got emotional today when addressing a certain issue. And what they're talking about is the guy or the woman got tears in their eyes. That's the only emotion that right-wingers are familiar with is grief an offshoot of grief, like sadness or sense of loss. That's the only emotion. They don't understand and cannot comprehend the rest of the whole spectrum of emotional responses. The only one that they are familiar with intimately is grief. When one of their kind gets, keels over from a heart attack or just when he's about to release videos, you know, they can get very emotional and start, you know, hugging each other and saying, oh, no, oh, no. But that's the only emotion that right-wingers are capable of. So your offer to James is honorable, and it's kind of you to make that offer, Kevin. But you know what? It wouldn't do anything. Right-wingers are incapable. They're just incapable. They live their lives emotionless for the most part, except grief. And occasionally they get their asses up in the air and they get into this kind of toy rage. And then they send off, you know, real, real ragey emails. But it's a nice offer, Kevin. It really is. And you're a mensch for offering. Kevin, I got to leave it there. Thanks a lot, man. Take care. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. Your phone calls and more wild conversation when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. 7 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Barrett. Barrett's message, Andrew Breitbart's primetime letdown regarding President Obama's Harvard Law School speech in 1991 reminded me of another primetime letdown by Geraldo Rivera, The Secrets Within Al Capone's Vault, in 1986. Yeah, the Barrett. The devastating video that Breitbart said that was going to change everything was something that PBS played about 4 years ago. Woo! All right, podcast trivia at the bottom of this hour. So if you're on the line and you haven't won a podcast subscription, let me try English. Be prepared to try to win a 1 year commercial-free podcast subscription download, blah, 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 The Molloy Show every morning in your email, okay? John is in Hartford, Connecticut, listening on Sirius. Hi, John.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm okay. How you doing?
Good. Hey, I was listening to the immigration talk that you had going a few calls ago. You interested in hearing a comprehensive immigration plan through a libertarian pragmatist lens?
If it's not real long, go ahead. If you can do it under 2 minutes, go ahead.
I'll take a shot.
All right.
First, you have to have border security. It probably has to be 98-99% effective so that every, 100 that try, only a couple are going to make it through the fly trap. You're probably going to do it in a combination of human manpower, some sort of construction in the form of an obstacle, and some technology as well to patrol with virtual capabilities.
Oh, wait, let me just ask you one question. Why is that necessary?
That's necessary because I'm going down a comprehensive solution that I'll kind of walk you through.
Okay, wait, one second part of the question. What border is this barrier going to be built on? What border?
Primarily emphasis on the southern border, but the northern border should not be excluded either, as well as the eastern and western sea borders.
Well, then I don't want to live here. I mean, what you're describing is a box. I mean, what the hell? If I want to live in a box, I'll just get a box and put it in my backyard.
It's only a box to get into, not to get out.
What?
It's only a box
but
to
wait
get
a second.
Into.
Wait a second. Tell me why this border security is so necessary. We've lived in this country for 200 plus years after we stole it from Native Americans. Thank God they didn't put up walls, right? So why all of a sudden do we need these barriers? What is it? Let me just get right to it, John. What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of?
I'm afraid of we don't have the capacity to support any more illegal immigrants than we already have.
Well, we don't support them. They don't come here to get on welfare. They come here because there's work. There's jobs that white people or not white people in this country, American citizens, don't want. If there were no jobs, let me ask you, John, oh, for God's sake, if there was no job here, what would possess somebody from south of the border to come here, to leave? It's mostly men, although it's women too. Let's use a man. The man leaves his family and comes here. If it's not for work, what's he coming here for? To get food stamps? Get real.
No, I think it's a combination. Jobs is the primary reason they're coming for here for.
Okay, let me ask you this. If he's coming here for a job that is available, why do you want to kick his ass?
Because
here's the thing. If he's going to come here and work, you have to make the assumption that the contractor or the person he's going to work for, that is going to hire him, if this guy is even halfway, the white man is even halfway legit, he'll be deducting Social Security because the guy is going to show up with some kind of an ID card. But I just don't understand. Libertarian, schmibertarian, right wing, left wing, I don't give a damn. What is this idea? We need walls and armed guards, and they're coming. They're coming. If you really want to solve it, let me give you a non-libertarian way to solve it. Repeal NAFTA. Get rid of NAFTA, because it was NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, that destroyed the economy of Mexico, especially the farming. So what do we want up here, us white folks? Do we want all the little brown folks in Mexico that just saw their entire economy destroyed to stay there and starve to death? Or are they going to say, wait a second, the Norte Americanos destroyed my economy. They have jobs there. I'm going there to work. That's all I'm saying. So, John, I'm going to leave it there, pal, because, frankly, no, I don't want to hear the libertarian point of view. It's also simplistic, isn't it? Huh? Just build a wall with reinforced concrete and barbed wire across the top, and every 100 yards, a guard tower. And up in the guard tower, people with high-powered, fully automatic weapons. By God, that'll stop them. Right? No offense, man, to my last caller, but the truth is, as far as a solution of building barricades and barriers, and as far as a barricade across Canada, come on, who are we going to keep out? The Keystone XL pipeline? I mean, come on. Come on. For heaven's sake, people. Oh, wait a minute. I forgot who I'm talking to, or what I'm talking about. Yeah. I don't know. I wonder what happened. I wonder what happened that got us to the point that so many people want to build fences and walls and gun towers and barbed wire to keep them out. I mean, if anybody has a complaint about the economic system in Canada, United States, and Mexico, wouldn't it be the Mexicans? I mean, we didn't destroy Canada's economy, and Canada didn't destroy ours. But a primarily agrarian country like Mexico was just rolled up in a ball and kicked into hell. I mean, the Mexican government doesn't subsidize Mexican farmers. So what happens? All of a sudden, Mexican farmers who raise, chicken and corn and make a living. All of a sudden, here it comes, the North American Free Trade Agreement. And the mega factory farms in the north can produce chickens for, pick a number, 10 cents a pound. In Mexico, it costs 15 cents a pound. Pick a number, any number. So what happens to the Mexican chicken farmer? He's dead. Corn? Okay, pick a number. It's $2 a bushel here. Pick a number. It's $3 a bushel in Mexico. What happens? The Mexican corn farmer's dead. So what do you folks want to do with people who have had their lives taken from them? Supposing Canada had done this to the United States, do you think citizens of the United States would sit here and just die, or do you think that they would cross the Canadian border to find work?
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. After the next break, we're going to do podcast trivia. So if you call in now, you got to play. Tim is calling from L.A. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Mike.
Yeah.
I'm calling back again.
Okay.
Yeah, I heard the interview you had with Margo. It was great. And basically, the reason why I'm calling is sort of like an addendum to her comments. LAPD does not seek out people who are illegal, undocumented, or people who are undocumented or, quote, illegal because of Special Order 40. But in the LA County jails, they have ICE agents waiting, you know, checking up on, I guess, the custodies.
Right.
On their immigration status. But something I discovered about, fraud. There is a law, it's 18 U.S.C., U.S. Code, Section 4, called misprision of felony.
Mm-hmm.
And after the Obama administration passed laws forbidding banks from committing, fraud.
Right, right.
It states that the court system or even the law enforcement is obligated by law to make the arrest. A failure to do so means that even a judge will go to jail if they refuse to do that.
If they refuse to arrest who?
The banksters.
Oh, the banksters. Okay.
Yeah. You were talking about, is there a way to make a citizen's arrest on banksters? Because, they arrested the Cardenas family illegally. Because,
well, let me just clarify. I understand that anyone can do that to anyone else. What I was saying is you never hear of it happening.
Right, right, right. So what the people need to do then is, the occupiers protest everyone, is to enforce the 18 U.S.C. Section 4 code, the misprision of felony, and have enough, even if it means, people like Markle, to get it on video and broadcast it, get it out there on the media, and started arresting the banksters because they are still continuing the fraud. They are still committing the felonies.
Oh, sure.
And that's what the people need to do, is to continue on. It's to enforce or to push 18 U.S.C. 4. Again, misprision of felony.
Well, it's going to take more, though. I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you. Up to this point, it's going to take more than just, everybody know about this. Let me give you an example. Supposing you and Sanchez out there in L.A. decide to effect a citizen's arrest warrant on the head of the local bank, Chase. And the two of you go to the clerk of courts or whatever you have to do, and you get your warrant to effect a citizen's arrest on the president of the bank that you're going to go in and arrest. When you walk through that door, that's the end of it. You're on corporate property, and once you're on corporate property, you come under their authority. They will pick you up and toss you out that front door, and maybe they'll open the door for you, Tim.
Actually, yes and no, because the first thing I would do then is when I get the 837 PC, I would get, which is, citizen's arrest in the state of California,
right.
I would get LAPD to arrest the manager for me. I have to charge the bank manager for fraud. And the LAPD officer would arrest them, physically arrest them. I can't go on my own.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, what is stopping people? This is more or less rhetorical. What is stopping people from doing this if this remedy is available?
People don't know.
They don't know.
Honestly, people don't know, and that's why I'm on the air telling you and telling everyone out there.
Well, let me ask it a different way. If I go ahead and get the necessary document in L.A. County and I go to effect the citizen's arrest and I go by the police station, I say, look, I have a legal document here from, L.A. County court to arrest Mr. Banker up the street. I need an officer to go with me to do the arrest. What do you think?
And you sign the paper, sign the 837 form, and then they are obligated by law to effect the arrest. You're going to make the arrest on paper, but they're going to handcuff him and take him to jail and present the person to in front of a judge, and you show the evidence in court.
Well, if that is the case, and if it can work that way, Tim, then yeah, I think people in I don't know how these laws apply, like in Phoenix, the city hardest hit, or here in Atlanta. Atlanta was a hard hit city where it concerns,
right.
And especially so
Florida.
Now, people who are being just tossed on the street. So I don't know how the law reads in these different jurisdictions, but if it is as simple, and I'm not trying to be a smartass here, but if it's as simple
as that, then
this has to be done. Something has to be done.
I don't think many people know about this. I mean, I'm sort of obsessive compulsive in a sense where I want to find the law, and I went searching and I found, like, again, 837 PC, and I found misprision of felony. I'm obsessed in finding the laws.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, and also I used to, you know, work in an LAPD substation as a volunteer, and I learned about citizens' arrest too.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they,
right.
my friends from LAPD
well, then,
said, if we don't affect the arrest, they could actually get in trouble for that.
Then this is another example of where we've got to educate ourselves. And Tim, I appreciate your bringing this up tonight. I've got to move on because here we are at a break. Thank you, Tim. Tim from LA, thanks a lot. We'll be right back. If you want to play podcast trivia, now's the time to get online. 877-996-2556. Do it now.
I'm afraid I can. I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of Americans.
Before the hour, and it's time once again for podcast trivia, where you can win a one-year subscription to Malloy Show podcast thingies delivered to your email box every morning, commercial free, for an entire year. The retail value is a whopping $59. Is it $59.60 or $56.90 or something? It works out to 25 cents a program. So it's a hell of a bargain at twice the price. But this one's free! All you have to do is answer the trivia question correctly. Are we ready? RB, driving in Canada, is the first one up for the challenge tonight. Hey, RB.
Hey, Mike. Long time.
Yeah. You doing all right?
Doing great. Listening every day on Sirius, XM.
On XM, Sirius? Well, they're all the same, right?
Well, not up here in Canada. If you have XM radio,
yeah.
You don't get the NFL or... a couple other channels for some reason. They're not totally merged yet.
Oh, I see. It must be your crazy laws in Canada, eh?
It has something to do with the CBC and the Conservatives trying to destroy it.
I think that's it. Are you ready to play?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. This week in South Dakota, a determined group absolutely resisted trespassing across their land by contractors for the proposed Keystone XL pipeline, even though those contractors said that their corporate law superseded the rights of the property owners. Five were arrested. Who were these protesters? Were they A, people who say they will vote for Newt Gingrich in November? B, members of the local college Young Republicans? C, indigenous people who are members of the Lakota Nation? Or D, the morning crew on Fox News Channel?
C.
Who?
C, the Lakota Indians.
C, you're absolutely right. Yay! All right, the way to go. Wait a minute. Was that the music we normally play for a winner? Is it? Play it again. Oh, there it is. Okay. All right, RB. I just wanted to make sure you got your full Full dose of congratulations. All right. Oh, that's for the people who don't make it. I see. Okay. Well, RB Ham made it. RB, hold on, and Kathy will get the pertinent information. And now you can listen at your leisure. Right, RB?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. All right, RB, hold on. And Kathy will write it all down. Do-do-do-do-do-do. Who else? Magilla Gorilla is listening on XM. Magilla Gorilla, huh?
Well, yeah, Mike. I got to do that.
Oh, wait a minute.
I'm in the trucking business, you know.
Oh, I got you. Okay, well, let me just say one thing before we chat here, Magilla. This hour is being sponsored by Barrett. And the message is Uncle Breitbart's primetime, or Andrew Breitbart's primetime letdown regarding President Obama's Harvard Law School speech in 1991 reminded me of another primetime letdown by Geraldo Rivera, The Secrets Within Al Capone's Vault, back in 1986. And isn't that the truth? All right, Magilla Gorilla.
Hey, real quick, Mike, the libertarian guy needs to remember one thing. And that's the question. Who's the immigrant pilgrim?
Yeah, really. Isn't that the truth? The two issues that just destroy me are the invasion of a woman's privacy by the right wing. Well, three, actually. Second one is this insistence on the public piety. And third is this immigration issue. It's just they're all three hot button issues that make no sense to get involved in any one of the three except as a means of oppression. And I just wonder, you know, how my usual wonder, how much longer before people say they've had enough and stand up as a group of 30, 50, 60, 80 million and bring about a huge smackdown. But that's not why you called. Where'd he go? Rick? No, wait a second. Did we lose? I think we lost our caller. Well, damn. All right, well, let's go to Rick driving in Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm okay.
Okay. Yeah. I'm here.
I'm here.
I'm here too.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you still playing the trivia?
No, we finished.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what I was calling for.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, we did get a winner. Thanks, Rick. That caller that I was talking to, Kathy, dropped. I don't know what happened. See if that's the person right there. Is that the person? Doobie doobie doo, da 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 da. Hold on a second. Just no, it's not. Okay. Well, to the folk, the man I was talking to, I'm sorry we lost you. Email from GK in Minnesota. Mike, have you heard? Corrections Corporation of America (CCA) has put bids into 48 states to purchase each state's prisons. Can you say free labor? Wow. Should any states take them up on it, corporations will exploit the prisoners no end to work for the man, not to mention slash the wages of the employees of these prisons. One of the stipulations is that they remain 90% full. So if this goes through, people in favor of immigration reform can forget it. That would take away the new employees needed to work for free. And prisoners. And for all those misinformed young people who like Ron Paul because of his views on the legalization of pot, forget it. This, too, would take away the employees needed to produce the products for the man, the prison labor. If it's not bad enough that these prison slave labor sweatshops exist in Arizona and Florida, they want to control them in all and in every state, CCA. When are these right-wing bastards behind all of this going to stop and concentrate on jobs like they said they were going to do? If it's not one thing, it's another with these people. Either it's a war on religion that they say that is being waged on the American people, or the continued assault on women, or the extreme desire to bust unions, and now it's prison slave labor. Well, how else were they going to undercut the Chinese in slave wages than to bring jobs home and have prisoners do the work in order to have their profit margins go even higher. No, I don't get it. When things seem to be on the right track, though slower than people would like, nonetheless, the economy seems to be on the right track. These Republicans have to resort to these social problems just to take people's minds off the economy. Mike, keep on doing what you're doing by exposing these thugs, cheats, and liars and hitting them where it hurts. You are right. We are in need of a revolution here, and take back this country from these so-called people. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. GK in Minnesota. Yeah, that's something we haven't talked about nearly enough on this program, the prison industrial complex and this hideous corporation, CCA, which we will eventually. All right, McGilly, you're back. I don't know what happened there, just a drop call. Where were we?
Oh, it's a cell phone nightmare, you know.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Hey, there are two things real quick. One is a Republican thing and one is a Democratic thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to do with Joe Biden was meeting with people in government officials in Central and South America.
Right.
And he had a kind of a convoluted conversation when they brought up that the drugs should be legalized.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, I really couldn't follow it real well, but the gist of, and you might want to look it up because it makes for interesting reading,
mm-hmm.
That they didn't want to support that because, this is my reading of it, that it would interfere with the wars that they've been promoting in South and Central America.
Yeah, that's true. It's all under the guise down there of fighting revolutionary groups by insisting that they are drug smugglers, which some of them are, but using that as the smokescreen to cover everything. So if drugs were made legal, where goes the funding?
Yeah, and you're still promoting the violence, of course.
Sure.
That they've been promoting for, 5 to 12 decades down in South and Central America. And it kind of gave me a weird feeling that, we'll never resolve that problem.
Mm-hmm.
The other one, by the way, is the is a comment by, I think it was Rick Santorum or one of the other What's the Matter with Republican candidates, where they were accusing liberals of using Comstockarian philosophy.
What the hell is that?
Well, I had to look it up, and then when I looked it up, I understood, right away, because it's a play on Comstock, who was
the
Comstock Laws.
Right, that guy.
Right, where the Postal Service General of the turn of the last century, where they were using the Postal Service and denying the transportation and the post office mails,
right,
of contraceptive educational materials and contraception contraceptive devices.
Yeah,
and so that's exactly what they're doing, though. I mean, it's
hey, McGilla, hold on. Here's a brake coming on me like a freight train. This hour has been sponsored by Barrett. I hope that's not the last name. I see both names, but I'll just say Barrett, okay? Barrett, you know who you are. The message, Andrew Breitbart's primetime letdown regarding Obama's Harvard Law School speech in 1991. And wasn't that a letdown? Reminded me of another primetime letdown by Geraldo Rivera, and that was The Secrets within Al Capone's Vault back in 1986. 1980, was it that long ago? My goodness. Thanks, Barrett. All right, Magilla, put a cap on it for me. Go ahead. I want to get one more call in here. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, so the Comstockarian philosophy argument that Santorum brought up is in the finest tradition of projecting, which the Republicans do all so well in accusing everybody else of doing mm-hmm. things that they do. And so I found that one particularly interesting, since I also had to look up Comstockarian.
I've never heard of that, but Mr. Comstock, the Postmaster General, I believe, right?
Right, exactly.
The so-called Comstock laws that I think the right wing that's out there right now, they want to revisit all of that stuff and make sure that all sticks and stays and keeps everything illegal. And it just makes you want to go out and commit crimes, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's reversing everything into the past. So.
It is. It's backwards world. Thanks, Magilla. I appreciate everything you had to say, and thanks for holding on. I appreciate it, pal. Aaron is in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hello, Aaron.
Hello there, Mr. Malloy. Listen, the next time you're talking to a bright bulb like the immigration dude, Mr. Ron Paul Acolyte,
yeah.
Here's the situation on so-called illegal immigration where, you know, first of all, don't forget the phrase, you know, that Hispanics use, which is that, you know, we don't cross the border crossed us. But in addition, the real situation is that we have artificially low immigration limits
mm-hmm.
for the express purpose of forcing immigrants to be quote-unquote illegal so that then they can be exploited. They can be paid under the table under the fear and threat of deportation so that they can be hired at slave labor wages and conditions where they can keep, you know, like 30 guys in a shipping container and tell them to keep their damn mouth shut. Otherwise, you know what will happen to you, buddy. And so the real thing is not that just Americans won't do that kind of work. They won't do that kind of work under those conditions. If you wanted to pay people $30 an hour and reasonable work conditions, then, funny enough, unemployed Americans would want to do that work. So mm-hmm. that's the issue. It's all a scam and a lie. And the people who tell those kind of lies really should be tried for treason. You know, if you think about it, Mike, the Constitution states that that our government should be A, of, by, and for the people, and B, that, you know, it should serve and protect the public, guard the Constitution, look out for the general welfare. So, as far as I'm concerned, any public figure who speaks out on important public issues, and any politician, should be continually under oath when they're speaking on important matters, because if their job is to protect us, and when they tell us lies in the effort to harm people or damage people, to allow the corporations to poison us and pollute us, you know, and so on and so forth, that have our money stolen by war on these false pretexts where, you know, 700 people die a year from so-called terrorism, but 500,000 people die a year in auto accidents, and they don't want to make them safer because of the cost-benefit analysis. And you can say that right on down the line with the 45,000 that die every year from lack of health care so that 8 people can go rich off of private insurance. On and on and on. So screw these people.
Yeah.
And put them in jail.
I hear you, Aaron. I also hear that it really does rattle your cage the same way it rattles mine, to the point sometimes that sometimes on this program I actually scream. I know that's hard to believe, but, you know, for the same reasons that that you do. Aaron, thank you very much. I appreciate what you said and the passion that you used to say it. Thanks, Aaron. Well, not enough time left to take another call. Well, if you want to read something very interesting, I mentioned this the other night. There is a new book out, and whether you read the book or not is up to you, but there's a great review of it by Adam Gopnik in the March 5th edition of The New Yorker. And it's about the book of Revelation. you've got to read it. It's called Revelation, Visions, Prophecy, and Politics in the Book of Revelation. It's written by Elaine Pagels, P-A-G-E-L-S. But if you want to see the bark stripped off, and I mentioned this earlier this week, if you want to see the bark stripped off the Christian evangelical fundamentalist terror operators about the Book of Revelation, you ought to at least read the review. And you can probably get it online at thenewyorker.com. But it's the title of this review is The Big Reveal. Why does the Bible end that way? And you will find out just how insane people who believe the Book of Revelation is some great apocalyptic prophecy, how insane they really are. Of course, you won't be surprised by what you find, I'll guarantee you. Oh my goodness, there's Kevin. Oh! All right, folks, have a great weekend. All right, I'll see you Monday night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kenny, wherever you are. Say goodnight, Kathy.
Good night, Kathy.